Welcome to episode 289 of the Energy Talks podcast. I'm energy and climate journalist Markham Hislop. The Peace Energy Cooperative recently received approval from the Alberta Utilities Commission to go ahead with the Peace River Energy Project, a 5-megawatt grid-connected solar farm. The project is Western Canada's first cooperatively owned and operated solar farm, and it's funded by the community members of the cooperative. The next step is an investment share offering to the 635 members. This sounds like a fascinating project, and I'll be talking to project manager Colin Smith about it. So, welcome to the interview, Colin.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. Glad to be here.
Well, renewable energy has been in the news in Alberta lately, since last August when the Alberta government implemented a seven-month moratorium. They lifted it on February 29th, and that created a whole firestorm of new controversy because a lot of observers said that it was more, you traded a hard moratorium for a soft moratorium in some ways. And the question then was, what effect the uncertainty of all of this regulatory upheaval would have on projects? Because there were quite a few of them in the queue. And yours is the first one coming out of the moratorium that was approved by the regulator. Maybe give us an overview of the project itself.
Yeah. So like you mentioned, it's a 5-megawatt or technically 4.99 megawatt AC onto the grid project. It's located 1 kilometer west. My apologies. West of the town of Peace River in the MD of Peace 135. Peace Energy Cooperative has been around since 2003. Originally started related to a wind project in Dawson Creek. Since 2019, this project was kickstarted, at least the idea, with the pursuit of a municipal Climate Change Action Center grant, which is a legacy of Energy Efficiency Alberta, which was an NDP program. The project wasn't awarded those funds, but going through the paperwork and the application process for that grant showed that there was a decent possibility for a project, and there was great community support in the Peace River region of Alberta and BC. And so for the past 3 years, 2020 to now, I guess that's almost 4 years, the Peace River Peace Energy Cooperative has been working towards this project. So it's located on a piece of underutilized pasture land that hasn't seen crops in over 20 years. So we started our multi-season wildlife studies and the regulatory process over 2 years ago once we secured a lease on this piece of land. And we were 2 weeks away from submitting our checklist application. So our project in the big scheme of things is pretty small. 5 megawatts is kind of like the lowest size of grid-tied solar project you would want to build. But for a cooperative doing a first project, it's about the right size. So yeah, we were 2 weeks away. And then the moratorium was put in place.
This is very interesting. And I want to talk to you about your members, because I've been up in your area a couple of times. I have to admit, I'm not a frequent visitor. But I know the reputation from people I've talked to is that it's oil and gas, it's farming, it's ranching, it's very kind of blue collar. It is not the kind of region that you would expect to find a lot of support for renewables. So tell us about your members.
Yeah, there are over 630 of them, and it's growing on a regular basis. The majority of them are centered around Dawson Creek, BC. That's where the cooperative is based. But the Peace region straddles the Alberta BC border, the Peace River watershed. It's long history in the history of First Nations and Canada. And yeah, so between 2003 and 2009, the cooperative did a lot of community engagement. I believe they hosted over 30 community public meetings around the Bear Mountain Wind Project, which was Western Canada's first wind farm on Bear Mountain Ridge, just outside of Dawson Creek. And those meetings really brought the community together. you know, every community is diverse. Some voices are louder than others. So the ones that you mentioned of oil and gas and, you know, all the, you mentioned farming and
ranching,
all of those, you know, there's diversity within all those communities. So yeah, essentially it's all in who you know, and friendships and connections of people in the region were, you know, leveraged and built upon for these community meetings. And I think by the end of 2009, once the Bear Mountain Wind Project was built, and just a little history, it was started, the land lease was secured by the cooperative, but it turned out to be a $100 million project. So quite out of the budget of a cooperative with 300 or 400 members at the time. So they did, the cooperative was part of the project in the early stages and got the community behind it. And then it was essentially funded and completed by Aeolus Wind and Alta Gas. But the cooperative still receives an investment royalty from that project. And yeah, that's, yeah, the members are diverse, mostly centered around the Peace region, but we actually have members in every province and territory across Canada.
Now, this is interesting. So I'm going to just boil it down to really simple, and you'll probably cringe when you hear this, but is it hippies, cowboys, and rig workers, or you know, is it one of those groups, or all of them kind of, you know, put their differences aside and cooperated on this?
Yeah, I'd say it's probably a bit of everything. We've got, you know, doctors, lawyers, teachers, farmers, counselors, some hippies, I'm sure. Kind of the whole diversity of the region is all represented in our members, and then membership's also open to people across Canada. So there's people that share the values of wanting to see community-owned renewable energy projects wherever they may be. And yeah, so our cooperative is unique in that it membership is open to all Canadians.
Colin, given the opposition that other wind and solar projects have faced in rural Alberta, which was, the government said, one of the reasons why it put a pause, quote unquote, on renewables development last year. But it sounds like your community took the time to organize, talk out its differences, talk out the problems, get everybody built, basically build a consensus. Then you went and did the project. As opposed to a big developer comes in, like I had Dan Balaban from Greengate on about a month ago. You know, they're a big developer. They do like 500 megawatt solar projects. That's quite a bit bigger than yours. But I imagine from what I've heard and seen, you know, it looks like a company like that comes in, they lease the land, they maybe don't do the kind of consultations that you do, your community did, then they maybe run into problems. People objecting to, you know, solar panel recycling or whatever, whatever their issue is. But I wonder what's your opinion on the importance of doing the organizing and consultations before you do the project?
Oh, I think it's a very key part of a successful process, and any large project that is, you know, affecting land and the area that people live in. Doing the community engagement beforehand is essential. And I think a lot of large developers see it as a risk to potentially do that more, you know, long-term and community, like on the ground community engagement because, you know, loudest voices in the room, but really it should be part of the process. The AUC regulatory process does not, community engagement isn't high on the priority list or the requirements for the for the AUC process. It, you know, by the book, yes, it is. You have to do stakeholder notifications and mail outs to all the landowners in the area within a certain radius. But it's a pretty, there's no face to it. You're not knocking on doors. You're not talking to people in an in-depth way in a community setting. So, you know, I see how the AUC process feels like it checks that box, but there's very rarely a requirement to get everybody in the same room, to host multiple meetings over a long period of time. And that's really where the community can come together.
I think... in the reporting that I did on the moratorium, that's one of the things that came to the fore, is that this is often a top-down approach. It's the developer and the regulator, and maybe the farmer or the landowner that's leasing the land, and other folks in the community. Generally, the way they participate is to oppose, and they join a group that's opposed, and then they lobby and do whatever they do.
Yep.
And I wanted to ask you a question about community solar, because this seems to be an example of the kinds of community solar projects that the Americans are trying to get up and running. And they've done an okay job. I think I interviewed someone last year who said that there were maybe like 190 community solar projects across the country, but far less than what they had hoped for.
Mm-hmm.
And they blamed the regulatory regime. It was still geared to utility scale, not community scale, that sort of thing. Of course, in Alberta, that's different, because you have a whole deregulated wholesale market, deregulated generation, and anybody who wants to build a plant can connect to the grid and has that right. And then you compete in the wholesale market with other generators. Yeah. So it's a little, in that sense, Alberta's market has actually got a leg up for community solar projects.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that that might be one of the ways to get around some of these, I'll call them NIMBY. I'm sure community members would object to that. But, you know, some of the local opposition can be muted. It can be overcome by bringing those people in, bringing the loud voices in opposition into the group, talking to them, consulting with them, ameliorating their concerns, that sort of thing. Just your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think it's the way to go, but it's also very challenging for, the system, like you say, the system is built for a top-down approach. Big money, large developers coming in and imposing a project on a community because of, you know, be it the transmission interconnections or the land rate or the solar resource. And it leads to that polarization of, you know, developer and regulator against the local residents. There's no real community benefit. But from a community, the community's project lens, I don't think that process is very well facilitated at all. We're the first one in Alberta, as far as we know, that are doing anything like it. And we are essentially the developer. But the system's set up where essentially the municipality or the region's residents can organize in a way that's not opposing. It could be opposing, but they can say, we want a stake in this project as well. Like, we're not the landowner, but we live in the area. And that's where, the community benefit agreements can come in. So a developer and can work with the community and have some sort of cost, benefit agreement, be it just a flat fee or a donation or whatever it might be to a local, regional group or the municipality specifically. But it's not an easy system to navigate, and it usually leads to big money and experienced developers imposing a project, because local landowners and residents, it's very hard to understand how to, work through these things from a bottom up perspective.
Interesting that you bring up community benefit agreements, because that's been tried with Northern Indigenous communities for a long time and mm-hmm. with some success. There are some downsides to it in that context, but it has been, from my observation anyway, fairly successful. I have a question for you that comes out of BC Hydro's recently released 10-year capital plan. So the BC NDP came into power in 2017. They brought in Clean BC in either 18 or 19. And they, one of the things that they were talking about is electrifying the economy, more heat pumps. I live in British Columbia. I've got a heat pump. But many of my neighbors now are starting to get electric vehicles. So this is the direction the government wanted to go, but it never gave policy direction to the utility, to BC Hydro. But it finally did. And Hydro responded with this 10-year capital plan. They're going to spend $36 billion. And they're not going to build any more hydro dams. That was the thing that really got me. They're going to enter into power purchase agreements with Indigenous communities, with independent power producers, and then communities, community organizations like yours. And I wonder, given the fact that once you've done all the consultation, you've built a consensus in the community, does that then present opportunities for you to say, hey, you know what, maybe we could do a 100 megawatt or a 500 megawatt project and enter into a PPA with BC Hydro, and this could be a big thing for the community? Is that the way you're kind of looking at this?
Potentially. So we went to Alberta. The cooperative is based in Dawson Creek, BC. And as you spoke to, the regulatory system there was not in favor of community-owned projects or any grid-connected independent power producers. So that's why this project's been pursued in Alberta. There's been this recent announcement, which I'll admit I'm not 100% familiar with. We look at the Peace River Energy Project as, you know, the first of many and a template where we're putting in a lot of sweat equity and learning the regulatory and the financial process behind the whole building a relatively small scale solar farm. To duplicate that in BC would essentially be starting from scratch because the regulatory process is going to be different. All those different pieces are different. So our template is to have a project that is members and community members can invest in through this investment share offering. And those investment shares will be available across Canada. And that allows for First Nations, your average, just average income earner to make a small scale investment that will also be RSP and TFSA eligible, as well as accredited investors. So most investments are, you know, only eligible to accredited investors or sophisticated investors, not your average, just your average community member. So we're putting a lot of work into our investment share offering. There's a whole regulatory process for that that is almost equally as challenging to navigate as the electricity power generation in Alberta. We're putting in all this effort in order to maximize the reach and prove that we can make this work on a small scale. And then, we hope to increase it replicate it and keep adding numbers. I don't know how fast we'll reach the 100 megawatt or the 500 megawatt scale. We're learning a lot. And this project, once it's up and running, will be a beacon to look at for other cooperatives in Alberta. And we'll see how this 10-year capital plan for BC works out, but we'll definitely be looking at that. But right now, this is our core focus, is this project.
Sure, fair enough. And it's very impressive that you've done all this work. I mean, I, 30 years ago when I was living in Saskatchewan and was kind of involved in this community economic development kind of work, it's like herding cats, lot of cats, mm-hmm. and some grouchy cats. And so, it's not an easy process. I have a lot of respect for the work that you've done up there. And I would hope that this serves as a template for other communities within Alberta and BC, because if everybody does it as a one-off and nobody learns from anybody else, then that's a tremendous amount of energy and learning that has to be. Whereas if one group makes mistakes, it's like in the US, everybody looks to California for innovations because they started early and they're making all the mistakes and figuring things out. And why would we want to do that in Nevada or Colorado when we could just look over the border and go, they made that mistake. We don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. So but one of the things I've learned in reporting about the American electricity system is the emphasis there on distributed energy resources. So I mentioned community solar. So that's something that they're trying to get going. The Department of Energy is putting a lot of money into virtual power plants, which are basically aggregators. So if there are rooftop solar, or maybe it could even be small community solar for that matter. And so the aggregator has a system that allows it to put the power into the grid at the optimum time to earn the optimum revenue for the members. There is demand response. There's all of these technologies that are just now coming into the market that are designed to be distributed. They're small scale. They allow flexibility. They're, and system operators are really interested in them. And I'm wondering the extent to which distributed energy resources have figured into the conversations that you've had with community members.
Yeah, it's the vision. I'd say the vision is a bit disconnected from reality, especially on our project. You know, we're in the ATCO. ATCO is the distribution and transmission owner in the area, and they are, I don't know, challenging to work with. I won't speak too poorly, but they're just a behemoth of bureaucracy and process, and it essentially they're a gatekeeper to the distributed energy system. And so, you know, just building a project, like, we can do what we can with our project, but once it hits the distribution system, we have no say in what happens there. And so, yeah, that's where there's a disconnect in community ownership and community, but, you know, it is the way it is, and it's part of having a reliable grid. But yeah, I hope that there's more evolution. I'd say that this current government is probably heading us in the other direction, more big business and, you know, top down, rather than you know, distributed small business and diversified management. But yeah, that's the vision. And then I want to speak to that. There's numerous other solar cooperatives in Alberta that are working on this in their own way. Peace Energy Cooperative is definitely taking the lead on a grid scale size. We're the only project or only cooperative that's doing a, you know, a large grid connected project. But there are a few I'll name. There is the Solar Power Investment Cooperative of Edmonton, or SPICE, who are getting started on doing behind the meter or microgen projects. Essentially, like, say there's the food bank, for example. I don't actually know if they're doing this. They'll pay for and install the system on top of the food bank and have a PPA with the food bank, reduce the food bank's bills and essentially split the difference. And then there's Bow Valley Green Energy out of Canmore that are doing a similar thing. They actually have a couple projects up and running. And yeah, there's rumblings of other cooperatives starting or have started. So that kind of, yeah, there is a legacy of cooperatives over a long period of time in Alberta. The Rural Electrification Associations, which were, you know, early turn of the century. And that's kind of, yeah, I think the cooperative movement waned a bit, but we're seeing a revival of community members that want to see this work in their communities and are organizing around it. And then there's a national layer to that too. There's cooperatives that have been around for a long time, Vancouver, Ottawa, Toronto, all like VREC, OREC, TREC, and those have all come together, and we just formed a new cooperative of cooperatives called Community Energy Cooperatives of Canada. And we'll be sharing knowledge across the country, even though each province is a whole regulatory, you can't do replicate things provincially, but there's lots of lessons to be shared and support. So there's some cool things happening in the space.
See, isn't that interesting? Because Alberta's system is divided into generation, which is unregulated, transmission and distribution, which are regulated, and retail, which is unregulated again. And yeah. So what happens is this is generally seen as a big advantage for Alberta, but as you know, given that your comments about ATCO as a gatekeeper, I mean, that is one of the big criticisms of the utilities, is they gatekeep the system and they keep innovation out that isn't in their best interest. And in the U.S., there's been a lot of talk about that and a lot of legislation passed to force the utilities to not gatekeep or to open that up to smaller players like yourself. And it's fascinating that in BC Hydro, where you have a crown corporation and is vertically integrated, it controls everything. Right. Yeah. All four of those functions are done within the utility, and they are notorious, absolutely notorious for being difficult to deal with if you're a small player like you are. But then you go on the other side of the border and you just got a different player with a different set of problems who is also gatekeeping. And I think what that speaks to, and this is just my personal opinion, but, you know, in Canada, we need to address this issue of opening the system up to innovation, because that's really what you guys are. You're innovating a business model, or innovating a model, an ownership model, let's say. And that ownership model has lots of potential, but there are impediments to it. right? And and the gatekeepers are one, regulation is another. There's all kinds of stuff. And it's, and as you say, governments are, the one in Alberta is not friendly to community-based kind of stuff. They like to do the top-down, favor the incumbents. And I find that, I find it just fascinating that in all of the, we're in the midst of rapid technological change and it's social and political impediments that are slowing down that adoption of that, those new technologies in Alberta and BC. Anyway, a bit of a rant, but that observation.
I fully agree with that. And yeah, and then there's also the rapid global change of, scale of change in, on multiple fronts. And I just don't think that governments or large, large business have, like, they're not anti-fragile. They're fragile and they're stuck as business as usual. And I don't think, it's the small scale that is going to be nimble and be able to adapt, but it is being gatekeeped. And yeah, ACCO has its own, business to, run and, innovation on from the grassroots is more of a fly in the, in their hair rather than what they really want to focus on. And, there's definitely integration between current government and boards of directors of the large companies. Jason Kenney just became a board member of ACCO
For our American listeners, that former Alberta Premier Jason Kenney, 2019 to 2022. And there's a lot of context around there that we won't get into on this podcast. But I do have one question for you, Colin. What is the cost of producing a megawatt hour of electricity from your project?
Whoa, that is a good question. A megawatt hour of electricity. Unfortunately, I am not sharp after the long weekend about what that answer would be, but I can give you some of the high level numbers. So annually, the project is estimated or planned to produce 10 gigawatt hours of electricity over its an annual basis. And the capital expenditure for this 5 megawatt AC project is we're looking at $11 million in capital expenditure. So I'll have to get back to you on that specific question, but I would imagine, I don't have it up here, but
the reason I asked the question
is
because there's a big debate in Alberta about wind and solar right now, and it's the old, you know, the wind doesn't always blow and the sun doesn't always shine. And we've addressed this issue in other podcasts where the solution to that is to re-engineer your grid. So you do things like you have demand response and you can trade with other, you know, neighboring jurisdictions. So when your wind isn't blowing, you know, the BC Hydro is generating electricity and they sell some electricity to you. So that's not a fatal or that's not a conclusive argument by any stretch, but I am curious about the extent to what it costs in Alberta to build the capacity to the cost of a megawatt hour of generation. Because if you look at levelized cost of energy calculations, solar at the bottom end of that is now down to $20.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can buy electricity on the market for 1 or 2 cents per kilowatt hour, you know, if you're buying it out of California or whatever. And I was curious, but it is a bar, you know, at the upper end of that, it might be $50, $60. And I just wondered in Alberta, where on that bar of 20, say to $50 per megawatt hour, your project sat. And we don't have the number. But
I don't have the number specifically, but I would say we are on the higher end of that. We are don't have the economies of scale of a 400 megawatt or a 500 megawatt project. We're also located in northerly latitudes, so our production is lower than it would be in southern Alberta. So we're not knocking it out of the park when it comes to the levelized cost of energy, but it's still within a sweet spot where we it's going to be profitable for the cooperative. And yeah, but we're definitely on the higher end of that due to our lower economies of scale. That's where anything less than 5 megawatts, I think we'd be way out of that range of return on investment and low on that bar of levelized cost of energy. But yeah, and we're looking at ways to increase that efficiency. And then we're also looking in the future at the battery storage, but it's a new frontier that we are not including in this phase of the project, but we are essentially engineering it in a way and having a pad that could receive battery storage in the future. Because yeah, solar and wind are not a magic bullet. We in many ways need the diversified. This is where the distributed and diversified, and a big thing that hasn't get talked about in this renewables moratorium or any of these conversations is conservation of energy. You know, we hit our peak, peak demand in that one cold snap where the emergency alert went out, and you saw that drastic drop in the load on the system. But there are so many opportunities for conservation education, conservation of large. Yeah. Anyway, it's a piece of the discussion that needs to be included, because we can't just increase. We can't keep on just increasing the.
Right. It's not all about produce. As we electrify the economy, as we need a lot more electricity, it's not just all about doubling or tripling our generation capacity. It's also making our vehicles, our buildings, our industrial processes more efficient, so that we do more with less. And that's one of the beauties of electric technologies. You know, like the heat pump I put in my house, I put for every unit of energy that I put in, I get 3 to 4 units back. That's incredibly efficient. And the same with electric motors and electric in an EV, you know, it's like 90, 95% efficient compared to an internal combustion engine at 20 to 30. So that's a very good point. I have another question about microgrids. Mm-hmm. Has this come up in your conversation with your community members where they say, you know what, we're a town of Dawson Creek. I don't know what you're 3,000, 5,000 people, somewhere in that range. And we probably could handle, you know, a 5 megawatt, 10 megawatt farm all by ourselves. Maybe we'll just set up a microgrid with VPP and some storage, and we'll make this thing work, you know, just by, we don't have to connect to the grid to sell that electricity. I'm just wondering if that conversation ever came up.
It definitely has come up. There's a lot of interest and, dreaming about those future potentials. But again, those gatekeepers there's so many issues in today's world that, you know, if we were more organized and had more resources, I think that those are future visions. But those are complicated multi-stakeholder feats of engineering that I think that's where the Energy Efficiency Alberta and the Municipal Climate Change Action Center was really heading in that direction, getting that funded towns to get their own energy efficiency auditors, and led to a lot of good positive change. But with the seesaw of political swings and ideology, we could be a lot further down that road. The moratorium on renewables is essentially like the exact opposite of heading in that direction. I think it's really protecting big business and big investors. And we were lucky that we're nimble and, had a good project team behind us that were able to ride out the moratorium. But it tripped a lot of things up. And I think, in my opinion, that was its goal.
Well, I find it fascinating that you're in a northern climate, so your solar resource is not as good as it is in southern Alberta. You're a small scale, so therefore, as you mentioned, economies of scale reduce your efficiency, and you're still profitable. Mm-hmm. And I think that speaks to the, because I get asked this all the time, well, why do we need wind and solar? Because it's really cheap.
Yeah.
It's really cheap. That is the bottom line, because you know we can get into, well, it doesn't have any emissions associated with it, but you know then you get into climate change arguments and it just gets cloudy. But everybody gets the pocketbook argument, yep. Right? If yep. I can produce a megawatt hour of electricity cheaper than coal or gas, then that's the way we're going to go. And yep. And I'm impressed that you can be on, even if you're on the higher end of the scale, you can still be profitable and still make money for the investors. Yeah.
And we're learning as we go. So I think that's provided a lot of savings because we're doing things on a shoestring so far. But there's also other expenses that are making us less efficient. But that's where the template comes in. We're putting in a lot of learning and navigation of this, also navigating the moratorium. But it'll inevitably, well, also prices of equipment continue to come down, and we're going to continue to reduce our costs and navigating regulatory and engineering processes. And like you say, you can't argue with the pocketbook, and this is where microgrids make sense and time of use, billing at the meter and all these things. Like, there's so many options and ways that we could be doing things, more efficiently and cheaper. And diversified, like, we still need to have backup and nighttime power and winter, for cold temperatures and all those sort of things. But the answer isn't just one big power plant. There's strength and diversity. And so that we're just hoping to play a role. We're just at the very early stages of that.
Yeah, that's my listeners are getting really tired of me dragging out my interview with Gerhard Schlage, who's the chief technology officer for Hitachi Energy, but he's a grid expert. And one of the things he said was, look, when you move to wind and solar, you have to do things differently with your grid, right? You have to re-engineer it, and you have to bring all of these fancy technologies that, digital controls and power electronics, stuff I don't even... I know the words, don't know what that, I don't know how that operates, but that's what he said. And one of the things that is true in BC and also true in Alberta, which has a completely different system, is the gatekeepers impede that change. They mm-hmm. impede the re-engineering. So all of this potential, you say, we could be more efficient. We could do more at a lower cost. This could be a better system. And this is what Schlage says. He says a re-engineered grid that has renewables on it is more flexible. It's more resilient. It can be exactly what we want, but you have to do the work on the grid. It doesn't come free. It's wind yep. and solar are not a drop-in replacement for coal and gas. That is just a fact. And Alberta has treated it like that. And yep. Colin, this has been a fascinating conversation. I think community wind and solar deserves a lot more attention. And I was very pleased to see that when I found out about your project, and we'll keep up with it. We'll check in with you in 6 months, or maybe I'll even come up to Dawson Creek and we'll do some video interviews. But good luck with this, man. I hope this works out really well for the community.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me and the Peace River or Peace Energy Cooperative. Just putting out to your member or to your listeners, anybody can become a member of the cooperative, and that gives you an opportunity to invest. We're planning on launching our investment share offering in June, late June, around the summer solstice to celebrate summer. And so thanks for having us, and we'll keep you posted on our progress.